Welcome to the Model Railroader, your ultimate destination for all things railroading. From trains.com, we bring you step-by-step modeling and construction projects, insightful reviews, tips from the experts, and more. This program is proudly presented by Aftersight, a community hub for audio news, entertainment, and resources. Find us at aftersight.org. This program is intended to be used solely by individuals who are blind or have low vision. All aboard!
Thank you for joining us for the Model Railroader magazine, read by Jason Consul. The first article is on trains.com, conducted by Eric White. The first inset article is Accurately Model the 1960s. The 1960s represents a period of change in history, and railroads weren't immune to that. At the beginning of the decade, large systems were looking for ways to cut costs as the trucking and airline industries cut into the near-monopoly railroads had long held on transportation. Diesels had replaced steam, but that wasn't enough. At the end of the decade, two of the biggest railroads, the Pennsylvania and New York Central, had merged into Penn Central, and the Great Northern, Northern Pacific, Chicago, Burlington, and Quincy, and Spokane, Portland, and Seattle were about to form Burlington Northern. Check out more on trains.com. The next inset article is Painting Track. Track is central to railroading, so it's a good idea to pay attention to it. It has to work well to deliver power to our trains and keep equipment going where we want it to, and it's also central to most scenes on a model railroad. Brown plastic ties and silver-colored rail are great improvements over brass rail on fiber ties and tubular three-rail track on metal ties, but painting is an important step. Cody Grivno shows how he makes quick work of the task on our East Troy Industrial Park project. The next article is from The Editor by Eric White. Using our modeling to inspire memories. The holiday period at the end of the year often results in reflection on past experiences, and many, or most, of the readers of this magazine connect trains to December and the Christmas holiday. Many of the layout visit stories we run at least mention receiving a Lionel, sometimes American Flyer, train set for Christmas early in childhood. They're often some of the first memories guys have of doing something with their fathers involving a shared interest. Being able to look back on these memories is great, but wait, there's more. We can also add to these memories with the projects we'll be taking on in the next year. Of course, we're building memories with everything we do, but there's another way to look at building memories. What time period attracts you? Is it a time you experienced? If so, I wouldn't be surprised if you told me it was the time period when you first had experiences with trains. Our columnist, Tony Kester, has often remarked his Nickel Plate Road 3rd sub is his very own time machine in his basement. It takes him back to the fall of 1954 when he was but a lad. Being a little younger than Tony, I'm drawn to a period about 20 years later and a few hundred miles east from where the Nickel Plate crossed Indiana. Just a few minutes west of our offices in Brookfield, Wisconsin, the Waukesha County Gandy Dancers Model Railroad Club hosts Friday evening open houses through the summer that my son likes to visit. Being able to create a world that honors and reinforces those memories of our youth is one of the attractions of model railroading. We get to build our memories in a physical form that we can share with others. Some of us are quite exact in what we want to recreate, while others take a looser view, but we're all in it for the same thing, creating enjoyment through our hobby. On Tony's layout, there's a long steel deck girder bridge that crosses the Little Vermilion River and a dirt road. Three plastic figures look down the road toward the bridge, an adult and two children. The figures represent Tony's father with two of Tony's children. The scene was inspired by the photograph of Tony's oldest son with Tony's father, and now it inspires that memory and others like it every time someone visits the layout. Why not start building some memories of your own? This is also a time of year when we mark changes. Jared Zizek came to Model Railroader in 2016 with his On Operations column. After just over a decade and more than 100 columns, Jerry is moving on. You can read his last regular column on page 61. But Jerry's not gone from the pages of Model Railroader. We have a story planned for next month, and we hope he'll be back after that as well. The next article is Step by Step by Lou Sassy. Model a Bulldog Mack Truck in O-Scale. For quite some time, I've been looking for an O-Scale early generation Bulldog Mack Truck to haul apples for Bullard's Orchards and Strong on my Sandy River and Rangeley Lakes Model Railroad. One day, I happened upon a circa 1920s Matchbox box cab Mack for the paltry sum of $10 on eBay. In addition to its more common 1-64 line of die-cast models, Matchbox at one time also produced a line of 1-43 proportion vehicles, covering a wide variety of prototypes. Though still smaller than full O-scale, the 1-43 truck was close enough for my project. I decided to upgrade the Mack with a bit of detailing and kit bashing. Besides swapping the box for a flatbed made from styrene, I changed the antique gas-style headlights to something more modern. A trip to my parts stash turned up a couple sealed beam headlights from a Ukraine-build 1930s Model AA Ford truck, also an eBay find. With that, the project was off and running. Step 1. Preparing the truck. I dismantled the Mack, drilling out the rivets holding on the cargo box, hood, and cab with an 1/8-inch drill bit. Photo 3 shows the parts separated from the model. I cut the old gas headlamps off their mounting bracket using a razor blade. I then drilled holes into each end of the bracket using a number 76 bit held in a pin vise to accept the replacement headlights in Figure 4. I also squared off the mounts on the new headlights and drilled number 76 holes into them. After adding a drop of weld bond, I inserted lengths of 24 gauge wire into the headlight mounts, trimmed off the excess wire, added weld bond to the opposite end, and pushed them into the holes I'd drilled into the mounting bracket. I found an air horn from a Berkshire Models 1932 Ford flatbed truck in my parts box and, after drilling a number 69 hole into the top of the left fender, applied a drop of weld bond to its mounting post and pressed the horn in place. Photo 6 shows the completed headlights and horn. Step 2. A little surgery. I wanted the truck for Bullard's Orchard to have a flat bed instead of the box. After studying photos of prototype Macks on the internet, I settled on a 5-foot 6-inch by 10-foot 6-inch bed, more on this later. With a number 11 blade in my hobby knife, I made a sub-bed by cutting an O-scale 5-foot 6-inch by 10-foot 6-inch rectangle out of a sheet of 0.040-inch styrene. I glued two angles made from 30,000ths of an inch by 156,000ths of an inch styrene onto the underside of the sub-bed 2-6 inches apart. By placing these on the top of the existing plastic truck frame, the bed would sit a scale 1 foot 9 inches above it. I then glued three lengths of 30,000ths of an inch by 156,000ths of an inch styrene strip stock onto the sides and front of the subbed, as shown in photo 8. After test fitting the subbed to the truck, I realized I didn't care for the truck's wheelbase and bed being as long as they were, so I shortened both of them by 2 scale feet. Since the truck's frame was plastic, I used a razor saw to cut 2 feet from the middle of it. For the bed, after trimming 2 feet off the side rails with a hobby knife, I sawed 2 feet off the rear of the bed as well. If starting this project from scratch, make the styrene bed 5 feet 6 inches by 8 feet 6 inches. The truck needed a driver, and I found an Artista figure that already had both legs removed. If I took out the truck seat, with a bit of arm twisting, the driver fit perfectly behind the steering wheel. removing the cab roof casting would allow me to remove the seat and make installing the driver much easier, so I drilled out the rivet holding the cab to the fender casting. Using plastic cement, I glued the front and rear of the truck frame back together. Next, I applied 5-minute epoxy to the inside top of the two frame sections, and I replaced the front fender and cab floor casting. I added basswood to the underside of the joint for extra strength. Back in my parts box, I happened upon more items from a cannibalized Berkshire Valley Models 1930s flatbed truck, including an exhaust pipe, muffler, and taillight with license plate holder attached. I mounted these to the underside of the truck with 5-minute epoxy. I also added a strip of styrene below the arched front body of the truck and drilled a number 68 hole through it. I then installed a 24-gauge wire hand crank in the hole with cyanoacrylate adhesive, or CA. I brush-painted all of these details flat black. Step 3. Details and paint. Before reassembling the entire truck, I spray-painted both the glossy blue underframe and fender assembly with Krylon matte finish to make them appear more realistic. I repainted the hood and cab tester's aircraft gray, and I painted the subbed flat black. Some Mack trucks of this period had wood-framed windshields, so I recreated that look on my Apple hauler. I started by staining a couple lengths of HO scale 2x8 and 2x4 basswood strips from Northeast Scale Lumber with India ink, mixed at 2 teaspoons of ink to 1 pint 70% rubbing alcohol. I made the bottom of the windshield from HO scale 2x8 strip wood, which I carved with a hobby knife to fit the curvature of the top of the hood. I then cut 4 pieces of 2x4 basswood for the remainder of the frame and glued them together on the sides, middle, and top. I used the grids on a self-healing cutting pad as a reference while gluing the parts together. I cut a piece of 0.001 of an inch clear styrene to represent glass and glued it to the back of the frame with small drops of Aleene's tacky glue. Before reinstalling the cabin subbed, I repainted the headlights black and added the wood-framed windshield and Artista driver. Step 4. Wooden bed and weathering. I made the exposed wooden bed for the truck out of Northeast Scale Lumber HO scale 2x8 or O scale 1x4 strip wood. I distressed the boards by drawing a razor saw across their surface, stained them with my India ink mix, then glued them in place with weld bond. I made a rack for behind the cab from HO scale 4x6 lumber. Again, using the grid on my cutting mat, I laid the parts out and glued them together with weld bond. I added a Mack emblem to the hood of the truck by photographing another Matchbox Mack I had. I printed out the image, then carefully cut the emblem out of the photo with a number 11 blade and a hobby knife. I brushed Aleene's tacky glue to the back of the emblem and stuck it to the hood. I painted the truck's chain drive oxide red, and then I weathered the truck with Artist's powdered pigments. Finally, I added baskets of apples to my orchard's truck. Berkshire Valley Models, or berkshirevalleymodels.com, sells bushels of O-scale apples as item number 616. I bought 4 packs of castings and painted them Model Master Caboose red. Editor's note, any apple red will do. And the baskets Model Master Desert Light Brown. I then loaded them onto the bed of the truck. The paint wasn't even dry when Mr. Bullard jumped into the Mack and headed to Fenster's produce stand to drop them off. And his Mack truck makes a great detail for the layout. The next article is Modeling the New River Subdivision. This 19x24-foot HO-scale Chesapeake and Ohio layout is set in 1957. By John Brown. Photos by Doug Tagzold. My journey to modeling the Chesapeake and Ohio New River Subdivision in HO-scale began in Toronto, Ontario, Canada in the 1940s. Like many modelers my age, I grew up with Lionel trains. When I was 5, Santa put 2 sets under the Christmas tree. With my parents' encouragement, those sets grew to fill half the basement over the years. On Sundays, my dad would often drive me to downtown Toronto and park the family car in the rail yards. There, we had a front row seat to Canadian National and Canadian Pacific trains switching and passenger trains arriving and departing Union Station. In my early teens, I'd ride my bike to the Leaside, Ontario CP station and ride with the switching crew for a few hours. Those were different times. In 1964, I attended the National Model Railroad Association National Convention in Philadelphia and won an HO Red Ball Casey Jones 460 steam locomotive as a door prize. After that, I decided to sell my Lionel trains and switch to HO scale. Of course, having an uncle active in HO scale also helped nudge me to the world of 1 to 87.1, especially when I saw what he had in HO scale compared to my Lionel layout in a similar size room. Switching focus. When I bought my home in Wabashine, Ontario in 1977, I built an HO scale layout depicting the CP and a freelance railroad I called the Wabashine Central in the basement. However, the layout room had a height problem. In 1986, my late wife suggested I remove the attached 2-car garage's roof and build a layout room. Frequent trips to Railfan, the Baltimore and Ohio, then Chessie system, at Sand Patch Grade in Pennsylvania, got me interested in modeling coal trains. I was detailing Athearn hoppers and lettering them with Chesapeake and Ohio decals from Champ. I asked the CNO Historical Society if the decals were correct for that particular hopper model. The group's quick response led me to join the organization. Its monthly magazine at the time featured a CNO 2666. And I became enthralled with mallets, especially in Thurmond, West Virginia. As I started planning the New River sub, I wanted the layout to include a harbor with car ferry, several coal mines, local switching challenges, a couple of way freights, and the town of Thurmond. Being a rail fan, and with several cab rides under my belt, I knew I wanted my layout to operate as if it were a business. In January 1977, a series in Railroad Model Craftsman featured a layout that influenced me and many other model railroaders. Among the key features of W. Allen McClellan's HO scale Virginian and Ohio were car cards and a dispatcher. I was fortunate to operate on Allen's layout a couple of times. Elements of Wabashine Central and Virginian Railway also came to the new layout. The C&O, as well as the Virginian, served some mines. I also added the Clinchfield Railroad, as I had ridden trains out of Dante, Virginia, CSX by then, with the same crews for 6 years. Like the VGN, the CRR is represented by staging. From dream to reality. I designed the track plan for the New River subdivision. The layout features 30-inch radius curves and one 24-inch curve in the Y at Waynesburg, West Virginia. Grades are approximately 2%. Before I started work on the benchwork, I finished the walls and painted them sky blue. I used drop fluorescent lighting to illuminate the room. I started work on the new layout by building a 2-foot 6-inch by 6-foot module. It includes the harbor section with car ferry, a 3-track yard, engine shops, and 3 industries. The car ferry, a Voco Marine extruded plastic kit, has 3 tracks, holds 15 40-foot freight cars, and serves as a staging yard. I built this section on ping pong table legs so I can take it to local train shows. After I finished the module, I started bench work for the main layout. I used 1x2 pine for the legs and joists. The tabletop is 1/2-inch plywood, topped with homasote roadbed. Then I started laying track to connect the module with the rest of the layout. I cut all of the ties from 1x4 pine and stained them. I hand-laid weathered code 83 rail on the branch line. I used code 100 rail, recycled from my basement CP layout, on the main. The turnouts are also scratch-built. I used Caboose Industries number 204S high-level switch stands to operate those that can be easily reached from the aisle. I installed Tortoise by Circuitron switch motors in hard-to-reach places or where there wasn't room for a Caboose Industries stand. One town at a time. Waynesburg, West Virginia, is where I built the first three coal mines. I also installed a Y for turning CNO2662 steam locomotives here. One leg of the Y disappears into the scenery and serves as a single staging track for the Virginian Railway. I wanted Waynesburg to be the start or end of three railroads. In addition to the Virginian, the CNO runs from here to the rest of the layout. The fictional Wabashine Central operates between Waynesburg and Port Alexander. Each railroad serves a specific coal tipple in Waynesburg. All three lines work the company store and loading dock. Waynesburg was inspired by DeHue, West Virginia. I placed single-story company houses on one side of the tracks and two-story homes on the other. The houses are a mix of Keystone kits and scratch-built. A local country road shares the railroad bridge over a stream in Waynesburg, just like in Belleville, West Virginia. The next community is Callow, West Virginia. It has three coal mines, a freight house, engine shops, and a lumber yard. There's also a marshalling yard for coal trains. I scratch-built the freight house, two coal tipples, and the mallet house. The station and the yard office are kits. I used Woodland Scenics injection-molded plastic kits for the business district. During operating sessions, two empty coal trains arrive in Callow from the staging. Operators break them down to serve the mines. When the loaded coal hoppers return to Callow, operators assemble them into two trains for the return trip to staging. Thurmond, West Virginia, is the focal point of the layout, and I wanted it to be as accurate as possible. I allocated a 2-foot 6-inch by 26-foot space for the town so I could include signature features. Friends built the passenger station, coaling tower, and commissary. I used kits for the crew quarters and various sheds. I scratch-built the freight house and Mankin Cox building. For additional info on the latter, see A Business for Main Street in the December 2019 Model Railroader. Currently, I'm working on the Kincaid Mercantile Building. The Mallet House and Thurmond Bank are also in the plans, along with a county road bridge that spans the New River. Later, I added Roland, a small town with three industries. The rail-served businesses give the way freight from Thurmond some extra work along the way. The structures here are all from the Walther's Cornerstone series. Strathdy is another town designed for a way freight crew to work. It has a coal mine with two tracks for loading and one for supplies. There's also a freight house, scrapyard, team track, trailer on flat car ramp, and two small industries. Five sidings, Ferguson, Mayorsdale, east and westbound, Hanson, and Southside Junction, provide work to way freights and are used during operating sessions. Locomotives and rolling stock. My rolling stock fleet consists of resin kits and ready-to-run cars from various manufacturers, including Athearn, Bowser, Intermountain Railway Company, Rapido Trains, Red Caboose, and Tangent Scale Models. If the cars have tack boards, I add placards from Microscale Decals, (87-975, and Jaeger HO Products, 2100. Motive power on the C&O New River subdivision includes brass imports and commercial models from Broadway Limited Imports, Bachmann Spectrum, Lifelike, River Rossi, Steam and Diesel, and Stewart. John Spring from Beaton, Ontario, weathers all of my locomotives and rolling stock. Thank you for joining us for the Model Railroader Magazine, read by Jason Consul.
You've been listening to the Model Railroader, brought to you by Trains.com. That's TRANES.com, in collaboration with AfterSight. If you've enjoyed this episode, we invite you to visit our website at aftersight.org for more audio editions and original podcasts. For additional inquiries or to contact us, call us at 303-786-7777 or email contact@aftersight.org. Thank you for listening.